somehow, some way, the Philadelphia Eagles, they kicked in that back door last night, and that is the beautiful thing about sports gambling. Sometimes those ugly winners come home and you just hand that ticket over. No apologies needed, and you get the money. That's Amal Shah, Tim Murray with you. It is a Tuesday, so we're sitting in for Michael Lombardi today. That was not a pretty football game last night, and we'll get into the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll get into the NFC East, but Doug Peterson, your favorite coach in the NFL, one of your favorites, Amal, does what the analytics tell him to do, and he goes for two after a miracle pass is completed to Richard Rodgers, one-handed with 12 seconds to go. And if you had the Eagles plus the 6.5 of all, you said, go for two. And you knew he was going to do it. He did run it home, and somehow the Eagles get the cover.
Yeah, I think it was a perfect situation. Seattle, let's be real here, defensively, it wasn't a two-point situation, whereas if the game were on the line, they had a feeling they're probably going to recover the onside kick. It's so difficult to get these defenses to really be engaged when you've got a 14-point lead. He goes for two and gets the cover, but I'll tell you what, the Philadelphia offense came out like a house on fire. First four drives, they couldn't even manage a single first down.
Sorry. They had negative 4 yards, Amal, in the first quarter.
I tell you what, my favorite play of the game, though, was when Carson Wentz threw that touchdown interception in the red zone. I forgot who it was for Seattle.
Laundry Diggs.
Yeah, it was sitting wide open right there. I mean, he did find him, so give him credit for that. But I'll tell you what, Carson Wentz, this guy, you talk about going in reverse. He's got a brick on the accelerator in reverse.
I can't defend my ginger brother. You know, I've tried them all. We've done plenty of shows together. I'll blame people. I'll throw people under the bus. Hard for me to do right now. The offensive line is terrible, but if you're watching that game and it's 20-9 Seahawks, 8 and change to go in the fourth quarter, the Eagles somehow, some way are driving them all. Yeah. They're driving. There's maybe a little bit, a glimmer of hope. You go for two, you're down three, and I've watched that play maybe upwards of 15 times. Dallas Goedert does cut off his route, but even if he's going to go back, he throws it right to Quandre Diggs in the end zone. I mean, it was, you have to laugh unless you're an Eagles fan, sorry, because that was one of the most just terrible throws I've seen in quite some time. I mean, Mitch Trubisky had a play action to nobody on Sunday night, but it didn't, nobody caught it. This one was thrown right to the other team.
Well, first of all, let me start by saying get a life if you watch that play 15 times. Second, the bottom line,
I had the Eagles plus 6.5. I was hoping. I was fingers crossed that somehow
it got there. You can't complain. Listen, by the way, you can't complain about any more bad beats for a while.
For the
next 30 days, yep, to get that W. You know, sometimes you get very lucky or very fortunate in situations. And to me, you're like, hey, then you get a bad break along the way. If you had Seattle, that would constitute one of those. You just suck it up and say, hey, I got one last time. So, but this Philadelphia team going nowhere fast, that's a big concern. This NFC East was up for grabs. They had an opportunity. You see Dallas and Washington both sitting there at 4-7. Dallas without their two now tackles on the line, they're in serious trouble. Philadelphia have really had an opportunity to grab this division, but I don't think it's going to happen. The good news for the Eagles is they'll be drafting highly. I'm sure they'll waste a second round pick on a guy who's really not an NFL quarterback, in my opinion, Jalen Hurts. But hey, you know the good news for your Eagles? Didn't you go to school in Eastern PA down
the
there? Lehigh Valley, close enough. They're not cheering for the Steelers over there.
The DC area, man.
Do we want to talk Washington football team?
I live in Las Vegas now, Amal. I am a proud Raider fan.
Listen, you just okay, so hold on. Let's clarify this. The 3-7-1 Eagles, I give you an option on 4-7 Washington, and a team in the Raiders that lose by about 1,000 to the Atlanta Falcons.
Give me the Raiders. Give me the Raiders.
Talk about a great effort. 5 turnovers last week.
Give me the Raiders. Look, man, I grew up in D.C., as did our producer, Aaron Oster. They haven't had a 11-win season since 1992. So, you know what? I'll take my chances with the Las Vegas Raiders. I'm all in, black and silver. Gear me up.
Well, hold on a second. You can't be a fan of the team if you don't even know their colors are silver and black.
Black and silver. Whatever.
They don't ever say when it comes to Ohio State, they don't say gray and scarlet. When it comes to Michigan, they don't say blue and maize.
Well,
I mean, come on, man. Aaron.
I'm all in.
Come on.
I'm all in. I'm all in on the black and silver. And we're gonna change it up. You know, we've moved, you know. We're not in Oakland anymore, so they're gonna reverse things now, Amal. We're gonna reverse. No more silver black talk. By the way, the best thing ever, talking about color schemes, and already we're off the rails because that's what we do, Amal, when we fill in for Michael Lombardi. Is when Jim Zorn was introduced as the head coach of the Washington then Redskins. And he said in his intro press conference, I'm going to dress my kids in the maroon black, and then looked at Dan Snyder as he mouthed yellow. The colors of the Washington football team have always been burgundy and gold. And that right there, you're like, okay, this is going to be a failure. So you know what? At least I had the colors correct. I just had them in the wrong order.
Hey, listen, man. I'm sure there's
a
lot
of the Raiders.
That's good. Let's move forward.
That black and silver. All right. So speaking of the NFC least, it's just a dreadful, dreadful division. But the rules say that one of them has to go to the playoffs, and one of them will actually host a playoff game. There are those records after last night's abomination that was the Eagles' loss to the Seattle Seahawks. 3-7-1 Eagles. Giants are 4-7. Oh, by the way, their starting quarterback is out, Daniel Jones, for a handful of weeks. Washington is 4-7. They play hard. They looked pretty solid on Thanksgiving. And then you've got the Cowboys there with another ginger in Andy Dalton. Man, needed more from him. But I'll just say this. Looking at the lines for this weekend, Philadelphia is a 9.5-point dog to Philadelphia. Washington.
Wait, hold on. Philadelphia is a 9.5-point to Philadelphia.
Green Bay.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yep, there we go. Washington, 9.5-point dog against Pittsburgh. The Giants, a 10-point dog to Seattle. And when the line comes out on Tuesday Night Football, Dallas will probably be around a touchdown dog, you would think, on the road at Baltimore. Looking at the schedules moving forward for all of these NFC least teams, there's no easy road anybody has. I mean, you can honestly say the Dallas Cowboys have the easiest schedule of them all, but they just seem like they want nothing to do with playing football right now.
Yeah, this team's completely disengaged. They don't believe in their quarterback play, and that's the biggest problem. Offensive line completely banged up. Ezekiel Elliott having the worst year of his career. You can't get the ball to CeeDee Lamb. He dropped a touchdown pass against Washington. This team right now going nowhere fast. But when you look at this division, to me, and you know, we had talked about it before on Sunday Betting Preview a while back. Washington, I thought, because of their defense, would be able to be competitive. This is a team that capitalized on turnovers, bad coaching by Dallas. You look at the remaining schedule for the Cowboys, though, at the Ravens. Now, the COVID situation could benefit them. At the Bengals, no Joe Burrow there. 49ers are banged up, but we saw a terrific effort from Kyle Shanahan's team against the Rams on Sunday. Eagles at home, very winnable game. And at the Giants, you're absolutely right. This is a schedule they can navigate well. Giants, I think, are going to be in a little bit of trouble when they go out to Seattle. And then, of course, the Cardinals at home. Cardinals are a team that don't play particularly well away from home. We saw that in Charlotte. We saw that in Foxborough this past weekend. Then they have the Browns, and they're at the Ravens and Cowboys. So, again, a doable schedule. But to me, I think Washington, despite having a difficult schedule, they should be a team that you're looking at to win the division right now.
And the funny thing about these odds, courtesy of BetMGM, Amal, it's just the odds makers throwing their hands in the air saying, I don't know what to do. +220, +220, +220 for Washington, Philadelphia, and Dallas. And then Washington, New York and Philly, and then Dallas is at 5-1. For New York, you have Colt McCoy now starting. How much of a downgrade is that from Daniel Jones?
Well, I didn't even realize we could actually consider it a downgrade from Daniel Jones, but it is. The reality of it is Colt McCoy, he's mobile, not tremendously accurate. He's not a guy that's going to stretch the field. And so I think that's not that Jones does a ton of that, but I still think there's a difference with him there under center. I don't like this New York Giants team with Colt McCoy as the quarterback. I think this team, they'll still be competitive, though. Look, they've had a team, you got to give them credit. They have played hard all year long.
Yes, they have. I mean, the Giants and Washington, both first-year coaches. Now, Dallas has a first-year coach, but I don't think they want to deal with Mike McCarthy anymore. The Giants and Washington do have first-year coaches. They're playing hard, and you got to give them the credit. They just don't have the talent yet. I mean, with the Giants, you lose Saquon Barkley. You lose Daniel Jones now. Washington's intriguing because you're at Pittsburgh. You're at San Francisco, which will be in Arizona. San Francisco is getting healthier, Amal.
Yeah.
A nice win this past weekend. I actually like them a little bit coming up on Monday night against Buffalo, where I think right now they're still a 2.5-point home dog against Buffalo. I think this San Francisco team is getting better. So if we – it's never – a smart thing to assume losses, but Washington, realistically, they're going to be a dog in both those games, are going to be sitting 4-9 heading into a week 15 showdown against Seattle. Amal, I tend to agree with you that they're the most intriguing team right now in this horrendous division, but it's hard for me to envision them beating either the Steelers or the 49ers?
Well, first of all, I disagree with you on the 49ers. If you look at that game, the reason why San Francisco won that game at Los Angeles, simply because Jared Goff was beyond awful. I mean, he has a critical fumble late in the first half. They had 3 points in their back pocket. He has an early interception that leads to a pick six in the third quarter. It was just a result of 10 points, 3 going away for the Rams, 7 coming in for the 49ers. I don't know if they're going to get that poor of play. The one thing with Alex Smith, you can criticize him for maybe not being a guy that throws the ball down the field, but he's not going to beat you with turnovers. He always makes the smart play. He may not be a prolific quarterback, but I think this team's a little bit dangerous. Gibson's run the ball particularly well against Dallas. Now, he needs to do it against these other teams. You're right, San Francisco's getting healthy, but I'll tell you what, you can always see when Goff is having a bad game. He just seems disengaged. He just doesn't seem to be on it. And when you look at this team right now, I have a lot of question marks, and to me, based on some of the play calling you saw from the Rams, there's a little bit of lack of belief from Sean McVay and Jared Goff. And, you know, he mentioned, I never thought about benching Jared Goff. The fact that that was even entered into the realm of possibility or conversation, that tells you that there's some deficiencies with Jared Goff at the quarterback position. These are not conversations you're having in Kansas City or in Green Bay if their quarterbacks are in Seattle if they play poorly.
Yeah, and one thing I did like about the Rams was the emergence of Cam Akers. I was a big fan of his at Florida State, and I thought that was a great pickup by the Rams, and I want to see more from Cam Akers. It's hard. If I set the line right now, Amal, at 6.5 wins, over or under, for the division winner for the NFC East, looking at the schedules, are you taking over or under 6.5 wins for the NFC East winner?
I have to go under, but it's unbelievable how bad this division is. It's just so bad, unfortunately. But, you know, these are teams that are going to draft. The Washington football team, they need some offensive line play. I mean, if they don't draft an offensive lineman this next draft, you got to question what they're doing. Dallas, remember, they get back healthy. They're probably a 9-win team. Philadelphia, big question marks. The Giants, though, no Saquon Barkley. So injuries have really decimated most of these teams in this division. I know everybody wants to sit there and criticize this, but we see this all the time, right? You see it in basketball. The NBA West is doing well. Sometimes it's the East, vice versa. This year, it's the NFC East that's struggling. So to me, look, I get it. Nobody wants a 5-6 win team in the playoffs, but we saw a 7-9 Seattle Seahawks team knock off a New Orleans Saints team in the playoffs. As Bill Parcells would always say, you get in the tournament and you got a shot.
No, I agree with that. And I would lean Giants. The only reason being they hold the tiebreaker over Washington. They've beaten the Washington. So Washington needs to have one more win than the Giants. And I just don't trust Washington to win 3 games down the stretch. But you look at the Giants' schedule, Seattle, Arizona, Cleveland, Baltimore, Dallas, it's not like there's a ton of wins screaming there. So if the Giants can figure out a way, as you mentioned, Arizona, not the greatest road team so far this year. Cleveland, you never know what you're going to get from them, even though they are a playoff football team, and then you finish against Dallas. If you're saying I just have to get the 6 wins, I would say the Giants, to me, at plus 220, because the fact they hold the tiebreaker over Washington.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. You mentioned the Browns. I'll tell you what, if anybody sat through that Browns-Jacksonville game like I did, you watch Baker Mayfield and you say to yourself, this guy is not the answer. Remember, they played that game without Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward, 2 difference makers. Both those guys are top 4 picks. Jarvis Landry showed you why. He had the NFL record of most catches in the first 4 years of an NFL career until Michael Thomas broke it. He's terrific. The running game between Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt is off the charts, but Baker Mayfield's going to give you an opportunity to stay in games. The Giants could potentially steal that game.
Real quickly, Steelers, Ravens, well, we could talk more about this towards the end of the show. What's your gut feel on this one?
Pittsburgh's going to roll in this game. I wouldn't want to lay the 10 points. I'd look towards the under. This, to me, is going to be a similar type of matchup that we saw between Denver and the Saints.
With the exciting college and pro football action every week, it's time to get into BetMGM Sports Nevada, the premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. In addition, VSiN is reporting live from the Mandalay Bay every weekend to bring you analysis of the best games. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. Physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. This is the Lombardi Line. Tim Murray, Amal Shaw, sitting in for Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher today. When we come back, you know what? I just haven't gotten them all amped up enough yet. How about we talk some Ohio State Buckeyes? Can they make it into the dance? We'll discuss that next. Stick around. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Grab the VSiN holiday offer now. New subscribers get 25% off your annual VSiN membership, plus get a $30 credit to the VSiN store. Get a great deal, improve your sports betting IQ, and get a new VSiN shirt or hat. Get everything we offer: Point Spread Weekly, 24/7 video streaming, 20% savings in the VSiN store, daily email updates with best bets from every show guest and host, plus every betting guide we create, including the College Hoops Guide, 452 pages of glory there. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe, save 25%, and get a $30 store credit. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. It is the Lombardi Line. Tim Murray and Amal Shaw sitting in for Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher. And, you know, I was looking over this VSiN read I was doing here, Amal. Do we also get access to the Amal Shaw Christmas tree lighting? Because that is apparently a big thing going on this week in our country.
Okay, I'd have to hear about it first, but I have no idea what you're talking
about. The Steelers-Ravens game is at 3:40 Eastern because of the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting. No?
No.
Right over your head.
Yeah, completely.
Come on. Really? You weren't marked in your calendar each and every year? No. Sit back and watch the Rockettes? I could see you ice skating right there in front of Rockefeller Center, 30 Rock.
I'm guessing you scored a 200 on the verbal section with that analogy on the SAT.
We'll leave my verbal SAT score out of it. It was not great, but we will leave it out. We do not need to talk. We do not need to rehash how I did on the standardized test.
Oh, forget that. You got any other great analogies you want to share with me? Come on, let's just get to the football here. I was promised some college football talk, and I'm talking Rockettes. Let's move forward.
All right. How about your Ohio State Buckeyes? Ryan Day tested positive for COVID-19, so their game this past weekend was postponed. That was the second postponement, or cancellation, I should say, for Ohio State. We'll find out the rankings later on tonight, Amal. You know, for Ohio State, this year is so bizarre, right? Because different conferences start at different times. The Big 12 has cannibalized itself, so no Big 12 team is going to be in the playoff. Oregon loses last weekend in Corvallis, so the Pac-12 essentially eliminated itself. So we're looking at Ohio State, whose game is certainly up in the air this weekend against Michigan State. What do you think Ohio State needs to do? Do they just need to run the table, win their remaining games, and they're in? And I'll throw this last one at you. Ohio State right now, if they play this weekend and play the remainder of the regular season games, Amal, they'll play Northwestern in the Big Ten Championship. if their game were to get canceled against Michigan State, they would not be eligible for the Big Ten championship, but they would probably play the likes of Wisconsin on December 19th, which might be a better resume booster. Would it be more beneficial for Ohio State to make it to the college football playoff if they played Wisconsin instead of Northwestern?
You know, I'm not completely sure. To a certain extent, after Ohio State's last game was canceled, I wasn't sure if their season's going to be able to be completed, so it was a little bit disengaged. I just want anybody to play Alabama and be less than a 10-point favorite.
They're so good. Yeah,
well, I think Alabama's a great team. I don't think they're as good as some of their past teams, but I just don't think anybody else is particularly good in college football this year. You see some deficiencies with Clemson. Ohio State's got a ton of deficiencies. Their secondary looks like it was in 2018. They've got some major issues back there. Notre Dame's a good football team. I just don't think they can keep pace with a team like Alabama right now. I was really impressed with North Carolina, the job Notre Dame did against North Carolina to slow down Carter and Williams in the running game. Sam Howell, to me, is the quarterback that probably the Chicago Bears wish they drafted out of North Carolina and not Mitchell Trubisky. So I look at these teams right now. I don't see anybody being a true challenger, but, you know, you get into the playoffs, who knows what happens. I don't know, honestly, with Ohio State. I'm surprised their odds are so low at plus $3. Look, if they get in, you think they've got a shot with Justin Fields, but I have a lot of question marks about this team. Texas A&M is playing particularly well. Florida, some concerns about the defense, but Kyle, and there's your Heisman winner, by the way, Kyle Trask. That's going to be the 2020 Heisman winner. This guy has had an unbelievable season. Mac Jones, the only one really in contention besides Trask. So, to me, not a lot of question marks remaining. I think we're going to wind up seeing Clemson, Notre Dame in a rematch in the ACC championship game. I think Clemson probably should win that game, not because Lawrence is there. I just think it's difficult to beat a team twice in one season.
I'm sorry. I know you've already criticized my likely score on the verbal SATs, but I'm a bit speechless because Amal Shaw, ladies and gentlemen, just spent like a minute complimenting Notre Dame.
Listen, I'm a realist. Look, you and I are talking off air. Clark Lee's got an outstanding defense. These guys came to play. When you hold North Carolina to 14 points, three points after the first quarter, they gave up 14 in the first, that's impressive.
I will bring in a Notre Dame jersey for you, Amal, next week when we do this show. Speaking of the Heisman Trophy, is it Kyle Trask? Is he a slam dunk? We'll discuss that next right here on VSiN. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineers tools for your family jewels. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday. I'm talking about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0, which includes the crop preserver, an anti-chafing deodorant, and moisturizer. So, Manscaped is what you need. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code VSIN20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Use promo code VSIN20. Amal Shaw, Tim Murray, sitting in for Michael Lombardi here on the Lombardi Line. And got a lot of college basketball going on. Got the Maui Invitational taking place in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah, when I think of Maui, I always think my secondary vacation spot would be Asheville.
Hey, man. Take it easy on the good people down in Asheville.
I didn't say they're bad people. Why would you sit there and make that assertion?
You said, I don't like people from Asheville, North Carolina. That's what I heard.
Well, then you might want to get your hearing checked along with your analogy skill set.
But we do have the semifinals coming up later on this afternoon. Early action. You got Stanford taking on North Carolina and Indiana. After their impressive win, they will take on Texas. Last check, Indiana, 1.5-point favorite. We'll get to some college basketball to wrap up this show. Also, look ahead to week 13 of the NFL season. But you've you've hit on the Heisman. You've hinted at it. And let's take a look at the odds, because Kyle Trask is the favorite. Not a big surprise. Florida's quarterback, the odds on at minus 125. So lay $1.25 there. Then you've got Justin Fields, which really surprised me. Maybe they just have liability, Amal, on Justin Fields.
I would agree with you there.
Because there's no reason he should be that short. Mac Jones at 3-1. Trevor Lawrence at 14-1. And then the longer shot, Zach Wilson, who's had a tremendous season. Saw a mock draft yesterday from Dane Brugler of The Athletic, who said Zach Wilson could be the number two overall pick in the NFL draft. So it's been quite the rise for him, but he's not going to win the Heisman Trophy. DeVonta Smith is incredible, but he's also not going to win the Heisman Trophy. Is this a two-man race, a three-man race, or a four-man race right now on December 1st, Amal?
Well, who do you have as 3 and 4?
I think there is at 14-1, Trevor Lawrence.
No. Move on. Forget about it. Are you kidding me?
You're talking about the Heisman moment, right? If Trevor Lawrence throws 5 touchdowns against Notre Dame on the ACC championship, I'm just saying at 14-1. At 3-1, of course not. But at 14-1, Trevor Lawrence, to me, if he has that massive moment, they obliterate Notre Dame against one of the best defenses in the country, as you just mentioned. I'm not making that up. They are a very strong defense. So if Trevor Lawrence has a massive game, I think there's a chance. Not saying likely, but at 14-1, I think you could. It's worth a long shot bet because of the potential of a long shot, or because of the potential of that Heisman moment in the ACC championship.
Maybe, but here's the thing. Forget. Okay, let's say Kyle Trask doesn't win and he has a terrible game against Alabama in the SEC championship game. Then it's Mac Jones. Mac Jones has been outstanding. You know, what bothers me with the Mac Jones situation is people have said, well, who was it this past week that came out? Bo Nix. He came out and said he's a game manager. Are you kidding me? This kid's an absolute superstar. He's going to be a top 40 pick in the NFL draft. Could sneak into the first round. He's been outstanding. Najee Harris had a terrific season, but Mac Jones has carried the day for these guys. And he has played great football. He just hasn't gotten enough credit because DeVonta Smith is going to be a potential first rounder. We know Jalen Waddle, assuming he recovers and he's healthy, is a first rounder. Najee Harris is going to be another guy who's drafted in the first 2-3 rounds. So I think he's gotten downgraded a little bit because of who's around him, but he has been amazing. You look at the numbers that Kyle Trask and both of these guys have put up. Trask, 34 touchdowns, 3 INTs. Justin Fields threw 3 picks in the Indiana game alone. I said that performance by Justin Fields in the Indiana game made Trevor Lawrence the first pick in the draft. Regardless of what Trevor Lawrence does, it was poor decision-making by Justin Fields on 2 of the picks. He should have eaten the football or thrown it into the stands. You look at Mac Jones again, 23 touchdowns. Now, what hurt Mac Jones was that big win they had against Texas A&M. I think that was the game where he didn't have any touchdown passes, or there was one game where he
had 4 touchdowns again. Tennessee. Okay. He didn't have any touchdowns.
And to me, that's not that big of a deal. He's played great, but Kyle Trask has just been off the charts in terms of what he's done for this Florida team. I love this team coming into the season. I thought they were going to win the SEC East, and we've seen how well they've played. I think they've got a chance, if they can force a couple turnovers against Bama, to win the SEC. But to me, it's a two-horse race between Jones and Trask. Trask is the leader. I mean, you could take a shot mathematically with both of these guys. Let's say, for example, you bet 125 on Trask to win 100, and then you bet Mac Jones at 40. You're still going to lock in a slight profit there if it doesn't work out. So, to me, there's a possibility there, just depending on how you see it. But I don't see anyone else being in contention.
Yeah, once again, long shot. You know, you always hear the value thrown around. I just think at 14-1, it's intriguing for Trevor Lawrence if he goes crazy against Notre Dame. But I do agree with you. It is Trask and Jones. Let's fast forward to December 19th, because that's going to be the SEC championship. You're going to get Florida. You're going to get Alabama. Alabama's going to be a favorite, probably double digits. I would imagine around 10 or so right now, Amal. But what does Mac Jones need to do to overtake Kyle Trask to win the Heisman Trophy? Because really, it comes down to that game, right? Every eyeball is going to be on that game. It's the two of the best teams in the country going head-to-head. Does Mac Jones need to throw 5 touchdowns and Kyle Trask go 2 touchdowns, 1 pick? Or does it just have to be plain and simple, Alabama needs to win the game?
No, Kyle Trask needs to walk into the DB's room in Tuscaloosa and tell those guys, hey, listen, I need you guys to get 2 to 3 picks in that game in Atlanta. If he does that, then they've got a shot. The reality of it is, when you look at this team right now, Alabama's complete everywhere. they're going to have a great game offensively against this Florida defense. We know the Gators defense has some deficiencies, but Trask can beat this Alabama defense. That's why I keep saying Alabama is not on the level. I know they're head and shoulders above everyone else right now, but they're not the same type of teams that they've been in the past with the defenses that Nick Saban has had. And so if they can really have, he just has a terrible day. I mean, he's going to have to throw at least two interceptions, have a turnover, and they get beat by 25, 30 points, then you might have a chance with Mac Jones. But otherwise, to me, it's Kyle Trask's trophy.
I think my belief is, and I know the touchdown numbers are the massive difference, right? Trask has 34, Mac Jones has 23. They're both three picks. They're both very high completion percentage so far this year. Mac Jones is like 76%. It's insane. I think if Alabama wins this game by two touchdowns and it's four touchdowns for Mac Jones and two for Kyle Trask, I think recency bias could lead to Mac Jones getting the Heisman Trophy. So at 3-1, it's much more intriguing to me than at -125.
Okay, Dan Le Batard. Anyway, you know, in terms of the voting, the guy's body of work this entire season, he has not had a bad single game this year.
Neither one of them have had a bad game.
I agree, but if you take Mac Jones off Alabama, they're still right there. Kyle Trask is the difference for the Gators.
You just talked negatively about Bo Nix calling him a Mac Jones, a game manager, and now you're doing the same thing, Amal. Talk some college basketball next. It's Visa, the Sports Betting Network. The holiday season at BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, with a risk-free first bet up to $500. Simply sign up and use bonus code VSIN500 to take advantage of this offer. Bet with confidence at BetMGM. Download the app today and use bonus code VSIN500 to get back up to $500 on your first wager. Happy holidays from BetMGM. New customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER, New Jersey and West Virginia and Tennessee. Call or text the red line, 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It is the Lombardi Line. Tim Murray and Amal Shaw sitting in for Michael Lombardi today. And college basketball season is up and running. We saw a heck of a performance on Thanksgiving and on Black Friday from Gonzaga, and they have a massive showdown coming up on Wednesday night against against West Virginia. Real quickly, last night we saw the debut of Rick Pitino at Iona, and I was walking out of the South Point yesterday, Amal. I looked up at the board and I said, Iona +20. Kind of like that, and I didn't play it. And I get home, and I'm looking at the score, and I'm kicking myself. Under 2 minutes to go in the first half, it's 37-28 Gales. Man, I missed out. Seton Hall comes back and wins 86-64. So you know what? Good decision, Tim. I didn't make that bet. Also, UNLV opened up with a 13-0 lead yesterday, Amal, and lost 78-51 against North Carolina.
Yeah, there was some great Carolina gravy in the end game. Carolina was -4.5 when they were down 13-0. Great opportunity to jump on UNC. After that, UNC absolutely rolls. They outscore them after that point, 78-38. They outscored them by 40. They were up 7 at the break. And then, of course, second half, they run away with it. This UNLV team, a long way to go. They lost at home to Montana State. Yeah. This team is going to be in serious trouble the rest of this season, it looks like, unless they get things turned around quickly.
Yeah, I was impressed early as we were heading out. It looked like they had a great game plan. They came out in the zone. UNC was struggling, and then UNC figured it out. UNC is going to be one of those intriguing teams, Amal. I mean, just a dreadful season last year. Roy Williams goes out, has the second best recruiting class in the country. Garrison Brooks back there. I'm intrigued by this UNC team. They're right now laying 4 last check against Stanford today. And I know you're a big College Hoops guy, as am I. And when you look at the ACC, we've seen Virginia falter early. They lose to San Francisco. They get back on it today. They play St. Francis, the Red Flashes. Duke is playing tonight against Michigan State, where they're a short favorite at home against Michigan State in the Champions Classic. When you look at this ACC, who is the team that is most intriguing to you?
Well, I think Virginia's a dangerous team. I think they're going to win the league. I think North Carolina's a very intriguing team. I don't know if they're necessarily good enough to overtake Virginia over the course of the ACC season. You know, Virginia, yeah, they had that loss early in the year to the Dons, but the one negative that I have with Tony Bennett's team is that because of their style of play, they probably keep a few more teams in games than, say, other Power 5, I mean, top 5, top 10 teams do, but they're still a terrific basketball team. I'm never worried about Virginia. They're just so fundamentally sound. When you look at North Carolina, you mentioned the recruiting class. I think it's obviously going to be a far improved team than they were last year, but I still have some concerns. Duke, to me, is going to be there, but I think they're a tier below Virginia this year. But you never know. I wonder how Mike Krzyzewski is going to get so many calls at home now that everybody will hear him cursing like a sailor on the sidelines. Can't necessarily drown it out. If you've ever had the pleasure or privilege of being at a game at Cameron Indoor, you sit courtside, I'll tell you what, man. Mike Krzyzewski is swearing at these officials like there's no time left in life. You know, I always say this. There's a reason why Roy Williams and Dean Smith have so much respect from their former players. You don't ever hear people talk about the Duke family the way they do the Carolina family. There's a big difference within those programs in that sense. As you can tell, I'm not a big Duke guy.
I'm picking up on that.
Yeah, well,
just a little bit.
But to me, the team right now, the Zags, this team's unbelievable. Suggs, and then the transfer of Andrew Nembhard has been amazing for this team. But keep an eye on one team on the West Coast that nobody's talking about, Stanford. You bring in Zaire Williams, the kid out of Sierra Canyon. He's going to be a top-flight draft pick. De Silva's probably, him and Remy Martin are probably going to be the two guys for the Pac-12 Player of the Year. Bryce Wills got off to a quick start for Stanford last night, but he's an effective player, good athlete. This is going to be a dangerous team, like Jared Hassan, what they can do. I think this is a good spot for Stanford. Had a nice win against Alabama. Shot the ball particularly well from downtown yesterday. This team's dangerous. This is going to be an intriguing matchup with Carolina today.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see this one later on this afternoon. Remember, unique start times. This game at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific. UNC right now laying 4 against Stanford. And, Stanford very impressive yesterday. Some people very high on Alabama, and Stanford came out and really blew the doors off. Though I do want to go back to Gonzaga real quick. Because, you know, how could you not be impressed by what we saw on Thanksgiving morning where Gonzaga puts up 102 on Kansas? And you, Amal, a lot of people, you know, if you read the preseason magazines or listen or you know, however you research, Drew Timmy was supposed to be the breakout star for Gonzaga. Averaged just under 10 points a game last year. And what does he do? He comes out, he's averaging 26.5 points through the first two games. They have so much fire. How does a team lose 4 of its top 6 scorers? Philip Petrušev surprisingly goes to go play pro internationally. And they don't skip a beat. They arguably might even be better. And you mentioned Jalen Suggs, too. This is where this program is now. They're no longer the little engine that could. They're getting 5-star recruits, and Jalen Suggs has looked at so far.
Yeah, I think he's the difference maker in terms of what he does. I love his patience out on the floor. You mentioned, how do you beat the Zags? You're going to have a great shooting night yourself, and you're going to also have to hope they have an off night. You look at that KU game. Kansas came out. They played well in that first half. But it was the difference was Gonzaga's ability to attack. That's what they do. You mentioned Drew Timmy, outstanding kid out of Richardson, Texas in the DFW Metroplex. He can flat out go. And then Corey Kispert, I'm actually almost offended when he misses a shot. His ability to get a square on a jumper is so awesome. It looks like it's going in every time. This team is dangerous, and I love it. No, I don't think it got enough play. The acquisition of Andrew Nembhard comes from University of Florida, a transfer, gets eligible immediately. He's going to be a difference maker, and I love the way Mark Few's using him off the bench. He's still going to play 20 to 24 minutes. He's a dangerous guy, sixth man, and I think he's accepted the role. I know it's early, but when you look at the WCC this year, it's going to be a very competitive league. The Dine took UCLA to triple overtime.
Yep.
Cody Ross, outstanding guard there for Pepperdine. This is a deep league. I don't know if Gonzaga is necessarily going to be able to run the table, but when they come down to Spokane South here in the WCC tournament, they'll win that. This is going to be a one seed. I think they should be the one seed overall by the end of the year, barring any injuries. Mark Few, in my opinion, may not have necessarily his most talented team, but I think he's got his best team.
Yeah, and this is, you know, we saw it on Friday, Amal. I mean, the totals can't go high enough for these Gonzaga games. I think it went off 154 on Thursday on Thanksgiving, and then you saw the market go nuts and just everyone firing on the over. I think it was around 170 for Auburn and Gonzaga, and the under ends up coming home. So Kansas, you mentioned, they didn't play poorly. You know, they still were there with Gonzaga for enough of that game. I mean, Gonzaga's had too much firepower, and that's why I'm intrigued by Kansas tonight. They're getting 3.5 in an empty Cameron Indoor Stadium, so it's not like this home court advantage is going to be a massive win for Duke. And I just, with so much youth and inexperience on this Duke team, well, to me, I would lean towards. Sorry, they're playing Michigan State tonight.
Kentucky,
Kansas. Kentucky losing to Richmond, who I'm a big fan of out of the A-10.
Yeah, Mooney does a terrific job there for the Spiders.
I think Kansas and Michigan State, two a little bit more veteran squads, have a good chance of winning tonight.
Yeah, I don't love the 4.5 with KU here. The Jayhawks, though, but I'd tell you, to me, Bill Self, he's one of the top five coaches in college basketball. Every year, even when they lose a ton of talent to the NBA, they just always are so effective. You mentioned Duke not having that home court advantage. I would probably give Cameron the 1A in terms of home court advantage, but if there's a 1B, it's KU at the Fog.
Yep.
But to me, this team is still going to be dangerous. I like the fact that they've already played Gonzaga, and they've seen arguably the best in college basketball. They should be ready for Kentucky. But I expect to see Kentucky's defensive effort be better tonight. You mentioned the Michigan State-Duke game. This is a tough one, but I'm going to give a slight edge to Michigan State here simply because of the experience which you alluded to. But for whatever reason, even when Tom Izzo has better teams than Mike Krzyzewski, they just can't pick Duke off. That seems to be their kryptonite. It's going to be a challenge.
In the regular season.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Forget that.
I was at the Elite Eight game, and that was the most talented team still to this day. Coach K, greatest college basketball coach of all time?
I'm sorry. John Wooden not exist?
All right. Modern era, most recent.
Don't ever make another statement like that again. Please proceed.
But the way that he avoided using Zion was criminal. And R.J. Barrett, it was almost like, oh, Cam and R.J., you need to shoot just as much as Zion. And it just made no sense. I was sitting there watching that game in Washington, D.C. And, so it does feel like, to your point, I agree. Duke always can pick off Michigan State in the regular season. But in the postseason, at least the most recent one, Tom Izzo was able to run circles around Coach K.
Yeah, absolutely. But by the way, the 91-92 Duke teams were more talented than that team. But regardless, to me, this is a spot to get Duke.
I think the 99 team, you could argue, was more talented.
Absolutely. Jay Willis and Shane Battier and company and Carlos Boozer, absolutely. But to me, this is an opportunity. If you're Michigan State, you got to go on the road. You don't have that crowd at Cameron. I mean, they get so many calls at home. Every block charge. Go look at highlights of Woj taking fake charges on YouTube. It's unbelievable the calls that Duke gets at Cameron Indoor. Without the crowd, I don't think the referees will be influenced quite as much. This is a great opportunity for Michigan State. They are in a gauntlet of a Big Ten season this year. This is an opportunity to really make a statement because we know Iowa's going to be good. Wisconsin's going to be good. How about that team in Champaign this year? Finally a chance to make some noise since the 05 team.
Yeah. Illinois. I love Brad Underwood. Take it to the test very early on in the season, but, you know, that's what the beauty has been so far. There have been some intriguing matchups early on. We've talked about San Francisco, Virginia Tech pulling off the upset over Villanova.
That's a good defensive team.
It is going to be a wild ride. I like Michigan State to pull the outright upset this tonight against Duke.
Go Sparty.
There's Amal Shaw. Did I just hear a Buckeye saying go Sparty?
I'm Big Ten through and through all day, every day.
Big Ten Amal.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Michael Lombardi back tomorrow. We got the Edge coming up next. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.